across this big, brown, flat, mysterious, crazy country, Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment, presents Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and Tony Martin.
And today, we blow the lid off the simmering Laurie Oakes-Peter Harvey feud. We meet the federal MP they're calling the Cat Killer. We give you the opportunity to accompany Pauline Hanson on her next traditional walkabout, and we reveal the sinister segregation policies being implemented at Disney World. We'll play Radio Gladiators, Pot of Shite, Mick premieres his new arts show, we'll award the Fumio, and welcome our live guests, comedian Greg Fleet and theatrical genius Stephen Burkhoff. Yes, that sounds like a show to me, and it's all coming up on the program. Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance, has to hear within 1 hour of coming off stage. Martin Malloy. Love and devotion from the real McCoy. Good afternoon, Australia. It's Martin Malloy right around the country with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, the man who, after the show, is being flown to Canberra to tackle the job. Even Boutros Ghali turned down. He's going to try and heal the Laurie Oakes-Peter Harvey rift. It's Mick Malloy.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
All right, we'll get to the rift. We'll get to that next, but first up, have I pointed this out? Look where we're standing, Mickey. Mm. Can you see it? I can almost touch that weekend.
Chihuahua! Chihuahua! Chihuahua!
Yes, indeed. We're all doing the Chihuahua, but before we get to that, we've got to get to this. The presentation of this week's Fumio to the individual who's gone out of their way in the last few days to make our job just that little bit easier. The Fumio this week brought to you by the Wagga Daily Advertiser. Not only the voice of Wagga Wagga, but the only media organ in Australia Darren Hinch hasn't been sacked from. Well, I suppose in a sense, Mick, Darren Hinch is a media organ of sorts. But getting to the Fumio, who are the nominees?
Mick Jagger, the man who made millions thanks to songs like Little Red Rooster, could now lose it all thanks to his Little Red Pecker.
Amanda Vanstone, who this week admitted that those millionaire welfare cheats, the rights, never actually existed. Just one of several rights that'll be non-existent by the time Amanda's finished. The right to a cheap education, for example.
Michael Hutchins, who this week provided comical scenes out the front of his house when he forgot where he parked the car. No prizes for guessing who's back on the Smarties.
Prime Minister John Howard, who last night announced, "I swear my ministers have got rid of all their dodgy shares. May lightning strike me down if I'm lying." But no, that Fumio's gone to Pauline Hanson.
Yes, Pauline Hanson, who steadfastly refuses to budge from her original contention that all Aboriginals should go back to their own country.
And Pauline, of course, visited Palm Island this week, Mick, with a 60 Minutes crew, because she was genuinely interested in ignoring what the locals had to say. And I understand this is the first in a series of such tours by Miss Hanson.
Hey, Australia, want to experience some genuine Aboriginal culture firsthand, but not too keen on having to sit there and listen to what the Aboriginal people have actually got to say? Then why not join Pauline Hanson on her next Northern Territory whingabout? You'll visit some of our country's most ancient and mystical landmarks to give the locals a good old-fashioned ear-bashing.
No, listen to me. I represent 99% of all right-thinking Australians, the silent majority. You people have got to pull your fingers out. Make something of yourselves. No, I haven't come all this way to hear what you've got to say. The 60 Minutes people have spent a lot of money flying me up here. This film isn't cheap, you know. They don't want to waste it on hearing your opinions. They want to hear what I've got to say. You people could all be millionaires if you just pull your socks up like the German refugees. They're all millionaires. Are you getting all this? Look, I'm almost touching one of them. That'll make for a good shot, won't it?
So why not come on a traditional whingabout with Pauline Hanson as she visits the top end? Because all white trash eventually rises to the top.
Better mix.
That's John Mellencamp. He saw you first here at Martin Molloy. It's Friday, and I think it's usually about this time that Mick asks the question.
What's all that about?
Listen to this tone. Professional tension between two of television's best-known giants of political reporting has erupted with one of the men quitting Canberra.
Wow.
The feud between Channel 9 News' federal parliamentary reporters Peter Harvey and Laurie Oakes came to a head last weekend after a dispute over who should cover the resignation of Assistant Treasurer Jim Short. Channel 9 insiders said the dispute had been growing for some time. It had led to an irretrievable breakdown in relations which could not be resolved.
Wow.
As such, Harvey will leave the Canberra Press Gallery to become the network's chief reporter in Sydney. Don't know how I feel about that. Peter Harvey, Sydney.
Oh,
it doesn't have the same ring, do it?
Oh,
what about Peter Harvey, Wagga Wagga?
That's a bit better.
Peter Harvey, Movie World.
That's not bad. This is fun. Join in if you feel the need to.
Peter Harvey, going down the water slide.
Why not?
Peter Harvey, from the Hellfire Club.
Oh, you can go on all day.
You could.
We're having fun, aren't we? But Tony, I can't work it out. It's a huge furor, isn't it? But I mean, I don't know what all the fuss is about. Neither of them host a game show, do they? Has one of them shaved off a moustache?
Have they changed the format?
No! It's a storm in a teacup.
Peter Harvey's still using a three-puzzle format on his reports, isn't he?
That's exactly right.
It would have been a tough decision to make, though. Mm. How would they have decided that?
Ooh.
Scissors, paper, rock? Mud wrestle? Looking at the result, I'm not ruling out wet T-shirt competition. No, Laurie knows what he's got and he knows how to use it.
Yeah.
He would have flounced into the news director's office showing just enough cleavage, sat in his lap, stroked the bloke's hair while singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President, seductively in one ear. Don't put it past him.
Not for the first time.
He's a little Jezebel. And I don't like it. As far as I'm concerned, there's only one way to sort these things out, and that's fight. Fight. I want to see Peter Harvey in wrestling trunks and balaclava, locking horns with Laurie Oates wearing naught but one of those sumo G-strings. Maybe Michelle Grattan in a bikini carrying the cards with the round number. What about some of the old gladiator's weaponry? Oates could have the spiky metal ball attached to a chain while Harvey stalks him with the trident and fishing net. Just stop me if I've gone too far.
No,
just enjoying the imagery, Tony. You're allowed to do that, aren't you?
Absolutely.
It's making you laugh, isn't it? Peter Harvey with a trident and a fishing net.
I'm just wondering where Paul Lynham stands in all this. He'll be making his move soon.
He'll be standing on the side, Mr. Fuji style, watching the whole operation unfold.
Yes, the pieces are falling into place.
I spoke earlier, Tony, to a Nine bigwig, and he says although the decision has been made, Harvey has one more opportunity to reverse the decision, but, well, I don't like his chances. It's a best bomb off the highboard competition. And basically, unless you own a pair of Speedos with Mel Colston's name sewn into the back, you've got Buckley's.
All right, we're not finished yet. Oh, there's plenty more questions begging. I've got plenty more. What's all that about, Gracie?
Who was that upstart interrupting?
I don't know, but what's all that about? Channel 9 bigwig, that wouldn't be Ray Martin you're talking about there, would it? Let's talk about Channel 9 just for a second. I know we're really keen to enjoy that song from Party of Five, Gracie, but yes, I can recognise it from one note.
Do you win something?
I can tell that song from Friends by a microsecond of guitar at the first bit. Listen to this. The Hey Hey It's Saturday team are shooting their 25th anniversary special at Disney World in Florida this week.
Mm.
And Plucker Duck has discovered there's only room for, in the Magic Kingdom for Disney-accredited cartoon characters. The duck has been given strict instructions by Disney World management not to associate with other costume characters while on the Disney World grounds and must also, quote, keep his head on at all times. His head? What about some pants? Get your priorities right, Disney. Like their own Donald Duck, Plucker is another character who's swinging free in the downstairs department, but as long as he keeps that head on, the kiddies are safe. Now, Plucker can't mingle with authentic Disney characters. What sort of regime of apartheid is Disney World operating under? Has the former South African government been re-elected in the Magic Kingdom? I saw Foghorn Leghorn being hauled away by two Beagle Boys last week. They dragged him into It's a Small World to have some cartoon electrodes attached to his testicles. Who let you in? What do they know over at Warner Brothers? But this, of course, means that Plucker Duck and Donald Duck can never be seen together. Wow. Mind you, back here in Australia, Plucker Duck and Alexander Downer can never be seen together. You think that's a coincidence? Now, Gracie, now!
Radio Gladiators is coming up. Call us now.
Well, there it is. That's the end bit of Closer to Free by the Bodines here at Martin Malloy.
G'day. I'm Mick Malloy, and welcome to my new arts program, Blow It Out Your Art. Today we take a look at the controversial new painting currently fueling robust debate in artistic circles. Check it out. It's Pauline Hanson burning at the stake of political correctness. It's a powerful piece of art that is so lifelike it'll make your skin crawl. Here comes a group of art lovers now. Well, what does everyone think? A most illuminating discourse, I think you'll agree. Next to this work is the first in a series of my own creation where politics collides head-on with art. Check it out. It's Pauline Hanson frying up a minimum order of chips in the nutty. The question, of course, must be asked. Pornography or art? Here's one I knocked up last weekend after a boozy lunch. It's a cherub like Kim Beazley shooting Nick Balkas in the dung funnel with a bow and arrow. It's a curious work that has the critics divided. Is it homage to the early masters? Is it a reaction to rampant modernism? Wherever you stand, one thing's for sure. It's an important piece of art. If that's not to your taste, you might prefer this exquisite piece depicting Alexander Downer from my Minotaur collection. Half man, half goat. Critical reaction to this particular piece has been overwhelmingly silent, but deadly. And on public display for the first time is this oil-on-canvas portrait of the Federal Treasurer nicked from the corridors of Parliament House. One look will tell you this is a nasty piece of art that will make your eyes water. And interestingly, with this work, no matter where you stand, the smell follows you round the room. Here's what some of the critics had to say about this controversial work. Robert Rooney, The Australian. Bruce James, The Sydney Morning Herald. Betty Churcher, Director of the National Gallery, Canberra. Well, thanks for dropping by, and don't forget to join me next week on Blow It Out Your Art as we take a look at some significant early works from one of our more popular artists, Pro Hart. Ooh. Quick, somebody help. I think I've just created my own pro-heart. Oh.
It's Donna Lewis here at Martin Malloy. She'll love you always forever, so she claims. Now, Mick, you seem to have put art firmly on the agenda.
I hope that wasn't too highbrow for anyone.
Oh, look, I hope the program isn't going too arty. We had Leo Schofield on the show earlier this week. We've got Clive James on a Monday.
Yep.
It's just a phase we're going through.
It is.
It'll pass.
We'll grow out of it.
Don't you worry. But while we are going arty, Stephen Burkoff's coming in the
beautiful
next hour. Now, would people know who Stephen... I know some people would know him from the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
He's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the chance to see him acting on stage, it'll blow you away. It'll blow you through the back of the theatre.
Mm.
He's just incredible. And he's out here at the moment not to act but to direct in Coriolanus.
Which, by all reports, went off last night.
Yeah, Coriolanus. It's Shakespeare, isn't it? It's your proper Shakespeare. But he will have done something to it. He will have given it a tweak.
Yeah.
Opened last night in Melbourne, and you might not know him from the theatre, but you will have seen him in something. He was the bad guy in Rambo.
That's correct.
He was the bad guy in that one with Cindy Crawford that came out last year.
He's played a lot of bad guys.
He's always the bad guy. And we'll see what happens in the next hour with Stephen Burkoff. Also, we'll have Potter Shite. I don't think we're going to be able to convince Stephen to stick around for that somehow.
Okay.
And also, we've got Radio Gladiators coming up. Anything we've missed this week, Mickey?
Oh, Tony, look, I'm just having a late flick through the women's mags.
Yeah.
And I've come across an article, and it's about Pamela Anderson, and she's releasing her book called Pandemonium.
Is she really?
And it's an autobiography.
Has she written it?
Yes, Tony, she has.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's all her own work.
Gotcha.
And it's got some... I thought we'd heard it all about Pam and Tommy, but she's fronting up with a few more revelations which will deserve our attention.
Can she top the trapeze work?
Yes, she can. Listen to this. Apparently, one of the linchpins, one of the planks this whole book is is supported on is talks about her role playing in the bedroom with Tommy.
Yeah.
And apparently they love it. And she says that apparently here she loves it when Tommy dresses up as a TV repairman. He knocks on the front door and catches her supposedly unaware, just wearing a skimpy towel with her breasts just kind of tumbling out.
Really?
Now, Tone, can't remember wrong, but that's how we start every day here at the office, isn't it? You knock on the door, there I am in the office, towel skip. We love it. There's nothing new there.
No.
There's nothing new.
That'll all be revealed in Mictimonium.
In Mictimonium. Listen, Pam sometimes also, this is another one, Pam sometimes surprises Tommy by dressing up as a slutty stripper and knocking on the front door. Tommy answers and she play acts that she's been hired by a friend to do a strip for him on it as a birthday gift. Now, if you were standing, you know, inside your house and, you know, there was a knock at the door, you opened it and Pam was standing there looking like a slutty stripper, surely you'd just presume she'd, you know, lost her key again. There's no role playing there.
Oh, it's a stretch.
Yeah. And listen, here's the other interesting revelation. She's quite serious about this. Mm. She says she has a serious side and spends her night meditating and reading philosophy books in a quiet candlelit room.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And I'm betting just above her head, swinging on a trapeze, is Tommy Lee dressed as Rudyard Kipling.
I'm sure.
That's got to be fly acting.
Well, here's a big late-breaking story from this week, Mickey. Have you heard about this bold plan by West Australian Liberal MP Richard Evans, the cat killer?
Mm.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah,
Evans, who has never owned a cat himself, wants to see all of Australia's cat population wiped out by the year 2020 and proposes to do this by unleashing a lethal cat virus similar to the rabbit-killing Caliche virus. Gee, they kept this quiet during the election campaign, didn't they? Gee, I remember when "Vote Liberal, we'll kill your cat" would have been called an outrageous satirical exaggeration. But no, Evans wants to exterminate your moggy because he says cats are sinister killing machines, systematically destroying our native animals. He says the lovable domestic cat is only one meal away from turning feral. So basically saying if you were to forget to put out a plate of whiskers for your cat one night, it'd be straight down the local wildlife reserve with its mates to crash tackle and chow down on a whole echidna. Straight down the smorgasbord. But he says Australians need to choose. He says his views won't be popular.
Right.
But we do need to choose between cats or native fauna. Yeah, I don't know. Will a wallaby chase a bit of dangled string around your lounge room for half an hour? Will a potoroo scratch up the back of your couch just for a bit of attention? Will a bandicoot slink into your bedroom at 3 a.m. and try and sleep on your head? Will a platypus burrow its way right down to the bottom of your doona cover, then suddenly jump out and scare the crap out of your grandma? And will a koala keep you amused all afternoon by systematically backing up to every plant in your front yard to lift the tail and unleash a burst of feline or even phenyl Chanel number 5? You know when they do that?
Oh, yeah.
Making that sort of hilarious, "I'm really concentrating" face. You're not going to get that out of an echidna. No, I think I'll stick with the cat, Mr. Evans, but I'll keep an eye out for you trying to call your emu in at night for its bowl of friskies.
This is Martin Malloy.
Hey, what goes on round here?
Brought to you by Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment.
It's Martin Malloy, I'm afraid, and it's time for the red-hot radio excitement that is...
Radio Gladiators, your chance to represent your state and win fame, glory, and fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
Let's end the week with the oldest idea on radio, Brush with Fame.
Oh, we're full of good ideas, aren't we?
Someone's had a brush with fame in Sydney.
Someone's had a brush with the pavement.
That's right.
In Sydney. That's what's going on.
Making friends and playing tourist weren't high on Johnny Rotten's list of priorities. The Sex Pistol told a young fan who offered to buy him a drink yesterday that their concert sucked and that he hated Sydney. Then Rotten's minder thanked Damien Irvine by calling him a bald idiot, punching him in the head and biting his hand. Rotten's sidekick, John Stevens, is that the bloke from Noiseworks? Is that what he's doing? Okay, he calls himself Johnny Rambo. He ended up in court, basically. A lot of legal details we don't need to know about.
Took him outside and went the punch.
That's right. With Stevens looking on, Mr. Irvine offered to buy Rotten a beer. Rotten said, "Why don't you just piss off, you bald idiot?" Is that one of their songs?
Yeah, I think it is.
I think it is. Why would you want to try and buy total strangers a beer? I said, because that's the way we do it in this country. Stevens then invited Mr. Irvine outside to fight. As he was being dragged out of the Siebel, this bloke's gone, look, all I'm trying to do is be friendly and buy you a beer. But Stevens punched him in the left eye. And on it went.
That'll teach him.
That is a brush with fame.
He had it coming, Tone.
I wouldn't have gone to court with that.
Mm.
If you can say that you've been punched in the head because you tried to buy Johnny Rotten a drink, that's on your resume for all time. That's what you'd expect. What are you expecting him to go, oh, I'm Johnny Rotten, sit down, have a nice little drink with an umbrella in it. Oh, what do you fancy? Oh, gee, what do you like? Oh,
well, do me a call, give me a call. Let's keep in touch. Big hugs now. Big hugs.
And
it's not going to happen, people. He just takes pistol.
Is this Johnny Rotten hanging out in the, is it the Ricky May bar? I don't think in the old days the Sex Pistols would be seen in the Ricky May bar at the Siebel myself.
But they've mellowed a lot, Tone.
All right.
You can see.
Okay, well, that's our excuse for Brush with Fame. Have you had a brush with fame we haven't heard about so far?
Yes, I did, and it was with you the other day, if you remember correctly.
What was that?
Over lunch, hello, voiceover man John Deeks.
Oh, yes!
Standing out the front of the restaurant.
That's the kind of circles we move in, people.
As we had a bit of a bite, and did you get the impression he's been in the business for a while?
Was that?
Well, you know what the giveaway was? When he came over, thumped his fist on our table and he said, if you see that Pete Smith, tell him he owes me 50 shillings.
That's Dixie.
But don't forget those voiceover men.
He never forgets. Mm. You get Dixie, Max Rowley, Pete Smith together in a room and watch the sparks
get
fly.
Get ready to ramble!
Here is a brush with fame for you. Our guest today is theatrical guru Stephen Burkhoff.
The Berkster.
He's coming in the next hour. I hope he's not listening now because I had a near brush with him that he probably hasn't heard about.
Right.
Me and Darren Casey, comedian Darren Casey, often appears on the show, were in some kind of charity comedy gig at the Melbourne Comedy Festival a few years ago. We've rocked up to the theatre. We thought we'll go in through the stage door. Stephen Burkhoff is on stage. He's running 20 minutes over on his one-man show. He's juggling. He's doing rope tricks. He's padding out. He's just going right off. We've just charged in through the stage door. It goes right onto the stage. I've just walked out. Case has grabbed me on the shoulder and gone, he's on stage, stop! And I've got one foot is just sticking out. One foot is sticking out and I've just held it frozen and then very slowly just pulled it back, hoping nobody would notice. Does that constitute appearing on stage in a play with Stephen Burkhoff?
I think it does.
Can I put that on the CV?
You've crashed his one-man show. One more step and we would have had the little hooks coming out from the side. You know the same thing happened to me during a performance by Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance.
Really?
No, I was out there, it was too late. I was going like the clappers, just trying to get off. Don't worry about me. Go about your business.
Did you have to have sex within 1 hour of coming off stage?
Oh, yeah.
That's how it works with Flatter's Lord O' the Dance. But that's what we're looking for. Unusual encounters with a famous person.
I think we painted the picture.
As you're going about the day-to-day activities, they have to be true. We don't want them made up. And have we got a prize?
Yes. Indeed, step into the prize lounge. We've got two comedy videos, The Black Adder Christmas Carol, A Close Shave. It's the Wallace and Gromit Oscar-winning bit-o animation. You've got to see this. Also, you're going into the draw for a trip for you and three friends to visit the Galliano Sambuca singles parties with at Club Med Noumea with Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance, and Stephen Burkhoff. We'll be making sure they come along. And we'll get Dixie as well.
Done.
That's a party. Call us now. And by the way, just a bit more of this music, Gracie. A lot of people have been inquiring where we get the fabulous prize music from in this segment. Most of it comes from the Ultra Lounge series, which you can get down your local CD Emporium. A few selections, of course, brought in from home by Mick and myself from the special bin. Call us now with your brush with fame. 1-800-657-657.
Something happened to him. On the way to heaven, it's Martin Malloy.
Is that the new one?
Oh, look, I can't tell. Don't ask me Phil Collins questions, Mick Malloy.
All right, sorry, it was a bit rude. Apologize.
What am I?
Kick my butt.
Phil Collins am I now? Nah, forget about it. We're talking Radio Gladiators. We're talking Brush with Fame. And we've got a number of people who have had a brush with somebody famous. Not Phil Collins, I'm guessing. Who have they had the brush with, Mickey?
Well, let's ask Peter to begin with. How are you, Pete?
Good, thanks, guys.
All right, fill us in. Who did you kind of have a liaison with?
Well, you can have a Quinella here. The two are Peter Brady from the Brady Bunch or Mikhail Gorbachev.
Oh, were they together? Were they out on the town together?
No, they weren't.
I was certain Peter Brady was one of the architects of Perestroika.
You might be right.
After he left that show? What happened? Tell us about Gorbachev.
Gorbachev, I was living in the States and I was walking home from work and I was wearing an Australian rugby jumper and he was visiting and it was one of these, like, stop the motorcade and get out and meet the people walks.
Right.
And he came up and he saw me in the Australian rugby jumper and he goes, ah, Australia, you know.
Really? Does he know much about rugby?
I think that was the limit of the conversation there, guys.
Do you think he got that mark on his head from a stray Sharon?
But I can tell you what, it's bigger than it looks on television. I can tell you.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. And just quickly, Peter Brady, what happened there?
I was in the local comedy store and I was sitting with this mate of mine. I thought, well, Dad, don't we know this guy here? We were trying to figure it out until one of the comedians actually spotted him in the front row.
Oh, no.
And the rest of the comedians on that night just poured buckets on him big time. And it was just after the old man had died of AIDS.
Oh, well, that's no good.
So he was just crawling in his seat all night.
Yes. Well, that's always good at a comedy venue to bring up that subject. Okay, thanks, Peter. A couple of brushes there. Let's see if Emma can go one better. Emma, have you had a brush with fame?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was quite funny. We just finished our day skiing and we went back to the restaurant where we were staying, and we sat down and we were enjoying a few snaps, you know, after a big, hard day of skiing. Mm. And in comes John Farnham. Anyway, we're looking over and really excited, and we ended up, the guy that owns the chalet plays the piano accordion, and he started up on the chicken dance song.
Oh, the birdie dance.
Yeah, the birdie dance. And so we, you know, in the swing of things, got up and got John Farnham up, and we're doing the chicken dance with John Farnham.
Wow. Is that right? And how good is he?
He is a classic. And his young children were there as well. Oh, and so we were doing, you know, how you loop arms. We were swinging around with each other. It was hilarious.
Yes. Well, I certainly hope he'll be incorporating a bit of that into his current tour. You know, if he's got that stage on the round, he can do a full 360 chicken.
Maybe with the pants on for a change.
Well, that would be good, yeah.
And how was he after all that, Emma? Did you shake hands did he punch you in the head like Johnny Rotten's minder?
Oh, just about. But my friend was so embarrassed. Her father was there and he said, would you give my daughter a kiss?
Oh, yeah.
So she ended up getting a kiss from John Farnham.
Oh, well,
while he was still doing the birdie dance?
Well, just after, actually.
Don't kiss and birdie at the same time. Someone will get hurt.
That could be frightening.
Okay, thanks, Emma. That's a bona fide brush with fame, but Jeff's got one too. Jeff, tell us about it.
How are you guys going?
Not too bad, Jeff.
Oh, God, I thought I was going to be about 100 years old before I managed to get through to you.
Spit it out, who you see.
Yeah, my brush, is with Mark Hunter.
He's
a dragon.
That was worth waiting for. And where did you see him?
Yeah, Bingle Bay, outside the
Shingle Bay
Saving Club.
Yeah. Washed up on the shoreline?
Like a walrus.
You try and push him back?
Yeah. No, he was up on a man-made stage. And
he was. So they're reinforcing it as you speak.
Anyway, it was about me and 10 of my mates. We didn't like what he was singing, so we shook our cans of beer up and sprayed him at him, and he dropped his microphone and jumped off the stage and he off after us. I tripped over.
He dropped his microphone and tried to catch it in his mouth.
Well, I don't know about that, but he caught me.
Did he?
And I tripped over, and I thought, shit, I'm gone.
Yes. So that would have been like the running of the bulls being chased by Mark, hadn't it?
Yeah.
And so he got you. And what did he do?
He just said, never mind, mate. He said, you're right. And I just said, yeah. He said, look, he said, I'll get you halves in that beer you just sprayed at me. And I said, I'll be a bit flat. And he said, I'll buy you one after the concert.
Oh, he's a good egg.
After that, we sort of shook hands. But that was the closest brush I've ever been with any star.
Well,
good on you, Jeff.
And a memorable one indeed. Thanks, Jeff. And now we've got Len. He's had a brush. Who was it with, Len?
I had a brush with Nudge from Hey Dad.
Whereabouts?
He was in the car park at Pizza Hut in Orange.
No, yeah, driving one of their vans?
Oh, no. It was after one of his publicity appearances, right?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Nudge from Hey Dad. And I walked up to him, he was just getting into the car, and I said, yeah, don't you hate it when people calling you Nudge all the time? And he said, yeah, F off.
Oh, gee, that's not Nudge.
Hey.
So,
Well, that's a brush with fame, Len.
And are you calling us from Orange, Len?
Oh, nearby.
Oh, I'd say g'day to the good folks up there for us.
Yeah, I've been traumatised by the whole event. I've never been able to eat pizza since.
Yes, I understood. And do you think he was perhaps auditioning for, you know, replacing Dougie?
Oh, I think he was just sick and tired of people calling him Nudge.
Understood it. Finding you with a straw that broke Nudge's back.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Len. We've got John now. John, who was your brush with?
My brush is with Colin Friels, the detective from Waterat.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Where'd you see him?
We sat behind him in the Swans versus West Coast game.
Right.
And every time he got up when the Swannies snapped the goal, we gave him a da-na-na-na-na-na.
Oh, from the Water Rats music.
Yeah, the theme from the Water Rats, yeah.
Very good.
You're amusing yourself, hey, John?
Oh, mate, we were having a great time. He wasn't amused, though, I'll tell you that much.
How many did you do before he chased you through the crowd like Mark Hunter?
Oh, he was pretty good. He just ignored us the whole time. I'll give him that.
Well, he can go. He could, you know, he's got a few moves, Colin Friels. You don't want to mess with him.
Yeah, I want to mess with the man.
Okay, well, that's not bad. Charging your own theme music back at you. Well, nicely done, John. Have we got Philip? Is Philip still with us?
Yes.
Philip, who'd you have a brush with?
I had a brush with the mother from the Wonder Years.
You lucky devil. The mother from... I can't even think who that is.
I can.
Oh, okay.
The kind of Kathy Bates-looking woman.
Yeah, I'm not sure what her name was. But
and where was it?
It was actually in Berlin. She was sitting on a table beside us in a restaurant.
Right.
And my wife saw her first and she couldn't help herself, so she went over and had a bit of a chat with her. And then I got up and went off to the toilet and came back and she gave me this big cheesy grin. So I couldn't help myself, so I went over and had a bit of a chat with her. And she was sitting with a bunch of these US soldiers.
Oh, yes.
And so we had a bit of a chat and I couldn't help asking her about Kevin's girlfriend.
So let me get this straight. You ran into the mum from the Wonder Years in downtown Berlin with a group of American soldiers. I've heard enough. I don't want to hear any more.
And you could try, you know, the Colin Friel style. You could sneak up behind her and just start doing the voiceover from the Wonder Years. She'd love that.
Sure. You could indeed.
Well, that's pretty good. But is it our winner? I don't know. You're going for Len.
I'm going for Len.
Okay.
In a Pizza Hut in Orange. It's good enough for me.
He's been told to F off by Nudge. I don't think we can top that. Jeff came close with Mark Hunter, but guess what, Len? You're going to... Well, firstly, you're going into the draw for the trip to Club Med Noumea, but you're going to have a couple of comedy videos.
Oh, fantastic.
They're coming your way, and we've just attached your name to one of the items going into the Beasley.
Our assistant... just don't attach it to any pizzas, man.
No pizza involved. It's going into the barrel. Our assistant Emma is reaching in. It's you and four others from this week's Gladiators.
Who... And the winner is Len from today.
Len Turner, that's never happened before. Len, it is you, in fact. And so your encounter with Nudge, you'll be able to tell Nudge to F off next because you're the one heading to Club Med. Thanks for taking part in Radio Gladiators today.
Good on you, fellas.
Thanks to everybody who took part. And we'll be back in the next hour. We're going to be having ourselves a brush with theatrical genius Stephen Berkoff.
This is Martin Malloy, brought to you by...
In this hour of the irreversible psychological malady that's called Martin Malloy, we're out and about with the Hanson Touring Company. We'll stir that pot of shite with the assistance of comedian Greg Fleet. And next up, we're on for a bit of light-hearted banter with theatrical bigwig Stephen Berkoff. All thanks to Coca-Cola. I think you'll find it's the ultimate summer refreshment. Jimmy Barnes with Lover Lover here at Martin Malloy. Mick, it's the second hour.
Good.
I don't think we should muck about. We better get our guest in here, this bloke. You may know him as a notorious and brilliant British playwright, actor, director, and, author of many a fine work. You might also know him as the bad guy from Beverly Hills Cop, Rambo, and that one from Cindy Crawford and Billy Baldwin that came out last year.
Oh, yeah.
He's both of these people, and his latest theatrical triumph, an acclaimed adaptation of Shakespeare's Coriolanus, opened last night in Melbourne. Please don't be scared, listeners. It's just Stephen Burkoff. Stephen, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Now, let's get straight to the theatre. A lot of my friends won't go anywhere near the theatre for fear of boredom.
Yes.
And what I do is I tell them to hang out till something comes along with your name on it. Is that a factor in your productions, trying to stop people from falling asleep?
Well, you know, we do make an effort. And it's sometimes difficult because a lot of the audience have already been preconditioned by other theatres. So they've already got that kind of Pavlovian reflex, and when they so as soon as they go into a theatre, the very kind of act of looking at that big proscenium arch and that seat, they suddenly go into this kind of sleep mode, and they haven't even seen it, they haven't seen the play yet, but it's because they identify with that. So they come in and you see that slightly glazed look over the faces, so you think, well, I'm going to have a hard time because they've been institutionalised and conditioned by all the rest of the stuff they've been seeing for years, but they still feel they have to go to the theatre, they still believe, and this is a wonderful thing about the indomitable spirit of the human being. No matter if he's been bored 50 times, he's going to go again, just in case. That's what I do when I go to the theatre. I often am bored, and I go to National Theatre quite a lot in England. I know it's awful every time, and it's painful, and then your ulcer starts playing up, and you start to feel sick, and then you're fighting against, you know, sleep taking over, and then in the end you kind of escape. But maybe a year later you hear something, and somebody says, oh, this actress is good, or this is good, and you go back. And so there is this spirit that nobody would ever possibly give anything another chance. If a restaurant was no good, you wouldn't go back. But we have this thing about art because we feel so culturally deprived that we kind of give ourselves these cultural massages. Otherwise, we think we can't. If I haven't got anything to say at the dinner table. If you can say, oh, yeah, I saw that play. You know, Harold Pinter, very, very good. I thought she was wonderful. Second act was a bit poor, a bit long. The thing. At least it gives them something to talk about. And it's very essential because living in a very materialistic society, people feel, unless they've got some kind of cultural baggage, you know, to debate and discuss. And so that's why we get a few of those. But we get young people who won't go to the theatre, won't see anything else. But when they see it's a Burkoff production or play, they feel safe and they usually come along.
Stephen, when you go and see a play yourself, can you tell 5 minutes in what it's like? And you're sitting there going, oh, no, alarm bells are ringing. I'm 5 minutes in. This is going to be a dog. This is going to be a turkey.
Yeah, you can feel that. And you can get it even before the play starts.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. When it's going to be a dog before the play starts, you get the sensations coming. How you find that? It's a kind of the breakdown of the audience and the kind of the demographic mix. And I went to see a Stephen Sondheim musical in London recently. Called I think it was called Company. And as soon as I got in the theatre, I saw these rather middle-aged, but they were all 30.
Those scarves.
They were all middle-aged and unwholesome and chattery a lot. Sitting down and like all excited and you know they're talking a lot and then they're kind of switching off their mobiles and they all had on these kind of awful clothes that were nearly fashionable, and as soon as I saw this group I thought, oh my god, this is, you know, this is really attracting a certain kind of audience, and this audience is not going to be the audience that really want to be charged, shocked or absolutely stimulated, but they want to be kind of reassured in their own kind of
it's a social occasion
and to have those social occasions to be reflected in the thing. So I heard this was good. I mean, I'm not really a great fan of Sondheim because since I heard that rubbish song, like Sandy and the Clowns, I thought, who can write such garbage as that and be that successful? So it means that the kind of threshold of consciousness has sunk to such an abominable level that you can write crap like that anyway. I sat there, and as soon as it started, the company is, some people like it, and it's about a group of people in New York who are looking for company.
Oh, yes.
But when you heard those songs, you know, and it's all about the audience, you see, we're looking for company. It was so dreadful. It was such the biggest piece of dreck. I sat there. I started not only hating the production, hating the person who wrote it, hating everything it represented, and hating the audience. And I got really, really madder and madder because I knew that this is puerile, insane crap. So I thought, I'll have to escape. So I ran out. I got out of the theatre. I went in the bar, and the usherette says, oh, have you got a ticket? And I said, yes, I'm just having a break. Oh, you can't smoke. smoke in here. This is a non-smoking bar. So I thought, this is very, very typical. So I escaped. And that was one of the worst experiences of my life. That particular evening was pretty detestable. And the whole, even the production was actually absolutely horrible. But it got rave reviews.
Oh,
so this is it. So what is happening now in society? Do you think, and this has often puzzled me, and you know as comedians probably more than anyone on earth, you can tell if an audience is with you or against you.
Oh, yeah.
So often in a play, because they're coming for kind of cultural guilt. You know, they sit there and they're trying, and you can go on playing your play. I mean, not my plays, of course. And people tolerate it. But if you're a comedian, they tell you immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Like you or not.
You don't have to get up and read the papers the next day to find out exactly how you went.
Yes.
Now, Stephen, we want enough about the classy theatre. We want to talk about rubbish with you. Can you stick around for that next?
Yeah, very good.
Dancing Stephen, that is M People moving on up here at
Martin Malloy.
And Stephen Burkhoff is still with us. Stephen, you've done a fair bit of theatre, but I always enjoy going along to the movies and seeing you kicking Eddie Murphy around, punching Sly Stallone about a bit, or even chasing Cindy Crawford about. Right. Do you take a perverse satisfaction from appearing in these Hollywood productions? I'm assuming you use the money to pour back into your theatre. What's going on there?
Well, you know, there is a certain satisfaction in playing the villain because usually they're the best parts. In other words, they may not be the main parts. Usually like they occupy only about, 20th of the film, 20%. And they don't get the girl, which is very nice because you don't have any nude scenes. You always keep your clothes on. Villains always keep their clothes on. That is a really big asset.
That's right.
You don't have to go to the gym and get a trainer and work out every day. And I was working with Cindy Crawford. They're all in their trailers. They had little mini weights and working on their bars. And they had this little rice things and they couldn't put on a half a gram of weight. So I like doing that because I can just come in. You can be a slob. You can be overweight. But as long as you kind of keep your hair cropped short and stare into the camera. You do that. That's what you have to do. But basically, there's a certain satisfaction.
Haven't you even been a villain in a Bond movie?
Yeah, I was in Octopussy.
That's one of the great British traditions, isn't it? The nasty British bad guy.
Yes. It's interesting that all the villains now in Hollywood, like 90% are British.
Yeah.
Because the British are so evil and vile. They would immediately say, Americans are too nice. You know, they're brought up, they're kind of very homogeneous society. They don't have a really severe class system. They're not kind of Oxbridge twits or public schools. So they don't produce this kind of inverted, perverted, twisted, neurotic kind of psychopathic kind of elitist ponce that we do in England. So they can't quite get that, but in England everybody's like that. You know, as soon as they kind of leave Oxford or they just get kind of a rod on and rather sneer. So play a villain, very good, you know.
Hanging from a helicopter.
Yes.
And can I ask, did you pick up many acting tips from working with Cindy Crawford at all?
I think she's very underrated.
Yeah,
because she's not a bad girl. She's made her own shows, and I think she was because she was doing this film, everybody was like projecting onto her, saying, "Oh, she's going to be really bad because she's a model." But she had a good go, and I don't think she was at all bad. In fact, I think she did some things very sincerely because of her lack of acting experience. And I picked up a tip that sometimes being very natural, particularly on film, can be disarmingly honest without being too cutesy, like a Michelin Pfeiffer with a cutesy, and she does this thing with her lip. You go stuff like that the whole time. And they make you sick, these Americans with this top lip, you know, where they're always like, it's as if it's got two little kind of like, you know, fish being caught with a hook, and the lip goes up, and they think it's cute, but I find it revolting. I want to vomit all over them and just kind of stab my heel in their faces and say, get that stinking kind of twitty little cutesy face out of my eyes.
There's the villain coming out in you again, Stephen.
Yeah, fights are. No, but apart from that, I've enjoyed it, and I like going to Hollywood. I like hanging out there, you know. I don't mix with all the stars there because I stay out in different areas and you know, they don't really mix with me too much. And Eddie Murphy was great to work with. I enjoyed working with him. And I just finished Decadence. So I was doing this play in a little 100-seat theatre in L.A. And the director came along and saw it and offered me the part opposite Eddie Murphy doing the film. And and I'm used to improvising on stage because I do that anyway in this thing. And then when we came to a set, the director said, well, you know, Eddie, he likes to go off the text a little bit, so don't be fazed. So I said, well, I'll try not to be. I was still thinking, come on, Eddie, come on, give me a few, come on. And so he started kind of changing the lines, so I started going into a completely different rap.
Right.
And he was thrown.
Was he?
Yeah, he could not believe this. And he'd say something, and I, very good, we improvise. And, you know, we got on very well.
Oh, yeah.
And I improvised my things, and all the stuff I improvised, they cut and kept into the text. All the stuff he improvised they kept in.
It was in the trailer. Stephen, you're a pretty intense bloke. How do you wind down? What do you do when you're not in the theatre?
I've seen Stephen winding down.
Oh, yes.
We murdered a couple of pitchers of margarita at the Tapas Bar in Adelaide one night. You've forgotten about that, hadn't you, Stephen?
Yeah, well, that's how I
might have been in the middle of a play, actually.
Yeah, that wasn't very good. That's right. That's what I really like to do. I like to hang out with a few of my mates in Adelaide.
At that time, you were heading off, I think, to Brazil to perform a play of yours in a language that the locals didn't understand, and you were quite excited about the prospect. How did it go?
Oh, yeah, I was doing my one-man show in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and it went down very, very well because we played in a certain area. We played in Sao Paulo,
mm-hmm.
and also my work is very visual,
mm-hmm.
and so consequently, you know, I'm almost miming, I'm almost doing a kind of body language so that people, even who are kind of handicapped, you know, with a hearing, can understand me, because I think the theatre should improve. Race all out simultaneously. It should both have physical, oral, musical, and I try to put it all together, like your sandwiches here. They've got beetroot, cheese, cucumber. So every sandwich tastes alike, because if you have a beef or a chicken, in the end, time they put the beetroot and the watercress and all this stuff that they put on it, every sandwich tastes alike. It tastes like a beetroot sandwich, basically. So I'm dying to get a taste where I can taste something new.
Well, listeners, if you want to go along to the theatre and see the biggest bloody beetroot sandwich you've ever seen, check out Coriolanus. It's part of the Melbourne Festival. And Stephen Birkhoff, thanks for talking to us today.
A pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Belinda Carlisle, that's enough out of you. In Too Deep here at Martin Molloy. Thank you to Stephen Birkhoff for coming in. You've got to hold on tight when he starts talking.
Strap yourself in and I'll see you on the other side.
And I know he's not acting in Coriolanus. He's just directing. But if you get the chance to ever see him acting in anything, you've got to go and see it.
It's a must.
It's something to see. But he's doing quite an innovative production of Coriolanus in Melbourne.
Mm.
Didn't you have an angle on that, Mickey?
Yeah, I once got a production together of Coriolanus in pyjamas.
And was that well received?
It was a critical success.
Well, everyone's doing wacky adaptions of Shakespeare.
Oh,
we've all
sure.
seen them on the croquet lawns, whacking mallets round, going, stick me on that. It's just a joke.
I've gone with that.
All right, well, while we're talking serious theatre.
It's time for radio's premier talent quest, Pot of Shite. Could you be the next Bindi Paxton, the next Ian Buckland, the next Maria Venuti, Yahoo Serious, or Animal, that drummer who used to be on Hey Hey? Even if you're merely the current animal, give us a call and let us lead you to the pot of shite at the end of the rainbow.
I love the footbody, Macarena, the corpse of Lali, Suena. I love the corpse of Lali, Macarena, Macarena.
Every winner on Pot of Shite takes home a 3-pack of CDs thanks to Warner Music and goes into the draw to win a Ford Festiva Trio valued at more than $17,000. Ford Festiva, the escape hatch. Fun to drive and easy on the wallet. All thanks to the Ford Australian Open. Okay, lads, stir that pot.
We'll give it a burl, Pete Smith, and we need a guest judge today. I figure to end the week, let's welcome comedian Greg Fleet.
There he is.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'd just like to point out I'm actually not just a comedian. I'm actually a bit of an actor. And I was actually in the original production of Coriolanus in Pyjamas that Mick put together.
Really?
And Joey Peroni and I actually played C1 and C2.
Is that right? And what about, have you worked with Michelin Pfeiffer?
Michelin, yes. But I actually wanted to put my butt in her tiny mouth to get it out of my eyes.
That's right. I don't think he'll be doing any productions with her in the future.
Mm. But he did do some massive dance work to him. People in that little break.
It was incredible.
Playing on some crazy work.
I've never seen anything like that. Just quickly, Felitti, we're talking brushes with fame.
Oh,
have you had any, apart from Stephen, have you had any brushes?
I've had a few brushes. I actually had two worth mentioning. One was with Captain Blood Jack Dyer.
Oh, yes.
We were playing cricket at the front of our house one day, and he came running past and walking past, and his wife was there, but she was some way behind him, as happens with royalty.
Yeah.
And he came past, and he was making gags about the way we were playing cricket, saying we're bowling underarm. So she said, "Give us a bowl." So we gave him the ball, and he bowled, and it was just wild. It just went off on right angles, and so we kind of went, "Yeah, no worries, it's over." And he went, "No, give us another one." And he was like a bit. he was a little bit loopy. Like, you can tell he was a bit freaked out that he'd done it badly, being a sporting legend. So he had another go, and he did it worse the second time. And he kept going, give it back, give it to me. And he wouldn't leave till he'd done a good one. So
a fierce competitor.
Yeah, yeah. So we finally, you know, let him bowl it and then moved the rubbish bin in front of the ball. I went, oh, well done, you know. And but he was acting very loopy and a little bit out there. And he walked off in a bit of a huff. And his wife came up behind him and said to us, do you know who that was? That was the great Captain Blood, Jack Dyer. And my mate said, oh, I actually thought it was Dustin Hoffman in his Rain Man role.
And did she insist on being referred to as Lady Blood?
Lady Macbeth.
I see. Well,
I've got one other brush with fame.
We'll save that one. Okay. We'll get to that brush. Just hold that brush,
hold
lady.
Hold that brush.
It's not going anywhere. We'll get to that brush, but right now, are you seeking to be impressed by raw, untreated talent, Fleddy?
I'm seeking to be treated by raw, unimpressed talent.
Okay. Let's see if we can get some talent of any description at all. Call us now if you reckon you've got some. You don't have to actually have any. If you reckon you're sitting on talent, call us 1-800-657-657.
This is Martin Malloy.
We know you're going to enjoy the show. At least we hope so, because it swings all the way.
Brought to you by Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment.
Thank you, the Martin Malloy Show Band. It's Pot of Shite time. Greg Fleet is sitting with us on the panel today.
Aha!
There you go.
That's he is. Alan Partridge.
All right. There he is. Can we go any better than that?
We certainly can. Are we jumping straight into this?
What have we got in the way of entertainment, Mick Malloy?
Well, let's ask our good friend Nick. How are you, buddy?
Good, how are you?
Oh, it's Nicky.
I've been surprised. There I was, leaping to the...
She had the op during the ad break. Nicky, what are you going to do for us?
I was going to sing a song, actually, to my ex-husband.
Oh.
Is he going to be listening?
I don't know, but who knows, everyone else is from Highway.
And where are you calling us from?
Oxenford. At Oxenford here, Pacific Highway.
Oh, you're in a car at the moment?
Yeah, I'm parked on the side of the road.
All right, well, deliver that musical message to your ex-husband, Nicky.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong. And I learned how to get along. And so you're back from outer space.
Oh, no! I think he gets the idea, though, Nicky. He'll be thinking twice before he crosses you again.
A lot of crazy parody work going on there, Nicky. You changed way too many of those words.
And, Fleddy, have you ever sung I Will Survive to an ex-lover before?
Yeah, because I sang... I'll get along, and I moved down to Geelong, but now I'm back.
I see.
Crazy, witty mate.
Localised version. Mick,
I like it.
I don't know whether we're going to be able to top that, but we'll forge on. Who have you got for us now?
All right, let's try Laszlo.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Not too bad. What do you got in the way of shite for us?
Okay, I'm going to impersonate Mrs. Costanza from Seinfeld.
Well, I'm looking forward to this, let me tell you. Take it away, Laszlo.
Every day it's something else with you guys. I try to get through every single day. And when I finally do, all you can give me is a free pack of CDs and Mrs. Costanza, for God's sake. Are you so insane? You don't realise that?
Yes, indeed. That is spooky.
And Laszlo, are you dressed as Mrs. Costanza for the performance?
I don't want to give too much away.
Yes, gotcha.
Laszlo, I reckon you've just got that on loop there. That couldn't have been you. It's too freaky.
It is me.
Oh, my God.
It's definitely him. And now booting the segment home today, we've got Lisa. Lisa, what are you going to do for us?
Before the Macarena, guys, there was a song called Marina Marina. It's a song that Italian people swear by.
Oh, yes.
And I'm going to do it in the voice of Tony Childs, who's been heard a lot as of late.
So it's Tony Childs doing Marina Marina. Take it away.
Okay. Marina Marina Marina. Ti voglio più presto sposa.
Is that Mrs. Costanza again?
What?
For John, Lisa.
Marina, Marina, Marina.
Give all your few pesos for some.
All right.
That will do indeed. That'll do here at Pot of Shite.
Is my microphone on? Because I'm giving her one. That was terrible. Oh, what?
Hey. That's Pot of Shite. Keep it in mind. And which one are you going to plump for, Fleety?
Well, I've got to say, Lisa was pretty, pretty good. In fact, I'm definitely going to give it to Lisa. No, at the last minute, Laszlo pulled it out.
Hey, Mrs. Costanza. Mrs. Costanza, you've got that 3-pack of CDs you were alluding to.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited. Oh, my God.
And you may well go into... Well, you have gone into the drawer for that $17,000 vehicle.
All right.
That'll take you straight to Miami, Florida for your retirement. Thanks for taking part in Pot of Shite, everybody, and thank you, Greg Fleet.
And you were shite today.
I see. That's the way we like it here in Martin Malloy. Summer of 69 here at Martin Malloy.
It's 1996 and the winds of change are blowing through the tiny South Pacific nation of Australia. And who's creating this wind? Why, none other than plucky independent member of parliament, Pauline Hanson. Over 99% of Australians agree wholeheartedly with Miss Hanson's refreshing viewpoint, as evidenced by the nearly 100 people who turned out to hear her speak at a recent rally on the Gold Coast.
I think she's fantastic, and you know she's speaking for 99% of all Australians.
Really? How did you arrive at that figure?
Well, me and my wife and Elsie, who lives across the road, conducted a poll.
In your neighbourhood?
No, amongst ourselves, and we discovered that a staggering 99%... of
the three of you?
Yes, agreed with Miss Hanson's controversial yet right-thinking views.
So you'd describe yourself as a supporter?
Yes, absolutely. I think she's a breath of fresh air.
And tell me, what do you actually know about her?
Well, I know she hates the bungs and the slopes. That's enough, isn't it?
So what's your...
Sorry, can't talk. Time for midday.
Australia's Aboriginals have long since prospered at the expense of the white population. While most white Australians barely have 2 cents to rub together and struggle to exist in their corrugated iron shanty towns, the black population live it up in their two-rack and double-bay mansions with their BMW motorcars and endless long lunches at all the fashionable restaurants. And who puts the bill for their extravagant Aboriginal lifestyle? Why, as always, it's Mr. White Man getting the short end of the stick. Thank goodness for the common sense of Pauline Hanson as she flits about the country speaking candidly off the top of her speech, which has been prepared for her by a friend of Graham Campbell.
I think she's right. I mean, I don't mind the Aboriginals and the Asians. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg, I think she was very good hosting the Oscars. But you wouldn't want to run into her down the bowls club, would you?
Outrageously, many people who migrate to Australia haven't the decency to fully master the Queen's English. And only Pauline Hanson has the temerity and wherewithal to condemn them and demand their deportation.
Well, again, she's right. I mean, these foreigners, they don't understand what we're saying. I mean, they wouldn't know what an abo is, or a slope, or a yip, or a jippo. They just stare at you blankly. I went up to one of them in Safeway the other day. I said, you, slant eyes, haven't you gooks been listening to Pauline Hanson, packy, packy, rickshaw and go home? And you know what? He didn't understand a word I was saying.
But it's not all work and racial purification for Pauline. There's family values to be maintained. The tireless Miss Hanson is a firm believer in maintaining family values, and so are her two ex-husbands. Bravo, Miss Hanson. You're the unofficial Australian of the year. The year, 1956.
Whoa, I feel...
All right, that was Newton. He's had a crack at sometimes when we touch. It's about time. Here at Martin Malloy, almost...
We're on now, aren't we?
It's Martin
Malloy. You're not amusing yourself with that little speech.
No, we're on.
Good.
I think
we often do.
I see. It's turning into community radio before our eyes, people. I think that means it's time to sign off for another week.
All right.
Just before we go, I should direct people to Martin Malloy Land on the big international internet. It's about 3 hours of reading.
Mm.
And of
You'll
course,
be tested later.
You can sit in our virtual chair. Give that a go. And do we have the address? Is Pete Smith ready to go? Here he is.
http://martinmalloy.village.com.au
Yes, that's right. Don't forget the AU.
And we should also mention Greg Fleet, who was kind enough to come in and hasn't left yet. He's still loitering. You're on at Harold Park in Sydney, first couple of weeks of November, with a very funny man called Peter Burner.
All right, there's some actual comedy.
Loads of fun.
Now let's go down the other end of the street as we sign off with the Martin Malloy Comedy Insincorator. This is where we take all the really piss-weak gags we were too embarrassed to do earlier in the week and we get them out of our system once and for all. Start the clock, Gracie, and I'll kick things off with news that, with more branches than anyone else right around the globe, McDonald's was this week officially named the world's most visible eating place. Second only, of course, to new mum Madonna's breasts.
A British Airways flight eventually took off this week after 15 passengers and a similar number of airline staff got out and pushed the aircraft 40 metres onto the runway so it could take off. A spokesman for British Airways denied the incident was caused by union trouble and insisted this happens on most flights carrying meatloaf.
You think people are getting the idea?
I think they're into the swing of it now, T. Martin.
Did I mention Madonna's breast?
Yeah, you did.
What about this? The actor who portrays Dougie the delivery boy in the Pizza Hut commercial, Die Armed Heidenreich, was this week charged with driving while in possession of an unpronounceable name. Tests show Heidenreich had a cocktail of five different consonants flowing through his surname while his Christian name was allegedly three vowels over the legal limit.
Christopher Reeve is back on set making his debut as a director on a TV movie. Already, though, there's been trouble on set with filming cancelled for the day when, for the first time ever, the director's chair got a flat.
And, of course, a plane transporting the Prime Minister to Hobart last night was struck by lightning, leaving all aboard safe but severely shaken. It was nothing. I didn't notice a thing, said Mr. Howard, his eyebrows standing a full 30 centimetres on end, Don King style.
The work here is done. Send them south once and for all, if you could. Gracie, time for us to get out of here. Thanks to our guests, Stephen Burkhoff and Gregory Fleet. All our gladiators and pot stirrers, all worth a mention, I feel.
Absolutely.
As always, a big end of week salute to our producer, Gracie.
Hey, Gracie!
Our assistant, Emma.
Emma!
Making those sketches, it's Vicky.
Vicky!
All the network button pushers and knob jockeys right round the grid.
And yeah, there you are.
And, of course, the big man in the glass booth, one Pete Smith.
On your Pete, my star.
We'll be back next week with, amongst others, Irish comedian Sean Hughes, Clive James and Sting.
They'll all be joining us here at Martin Malloy. Until then, people, if you can't say something intelligent, come talk to us.
Martin Malloy is a misguided production in association with half-baked ideas and ill-conceived concepts, Proprietary Limited. Brought to you by Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment. Pete Smith speaking.